I'm here today with Nancy Wiegand. She's an associate scientist at UW-Madison. My name is Joyce Coleman, and the date is January 15th, 2003. 2004, thank you. Perhaps you could begin by telling me a bit about your childhood.
I was born in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, actually. And then at an early age, my parents moved just to a suburb of Milwaukee, so in Wauwatosa.
Okay. And when did you first become interested in science?
I think it was just a natural thing. My father was interested in science. He had an engineer background, and he ended up, actually when I was in high school, he went back to school and got his teaching credit so he could teach science at the high school level. And so he taught physics for a while. So I think that from my father there was a science background. And I think at that age I wasn't particularly encouraged or discouraged from science. It was just, I just picked that up from him. And
okay.
I think my interest in math came from him too.
Now what career did your mother have? Was she a homemaker?
My mother was a homemaker.
Okay.
Stayed home.
Okay, and what level of education did she have?
At that time, she just had 1 year of college.
Okay.
When I was young, but after, I was the oldest, so after all of the children grew up, then she went back to school and finished her bachelor's degree.
Okay, in what subject?
In child psychology.
Okay.
So she was actually quite different, different interests and different abilities.
Well, she probably knew a lot about child psychology after
having
raised all of you anyway, so it would have been an easy degree.
Right.
So what about school? What were your favorite subjects then?
When I was K through 12, I took math, science. My mother says she remembers that I was really good at art, but I don't actually remember that because I haven't had time to do much art since. So I think I did do well in every subject, so I wasn't really favoring one subject over another.
Okay. Now, did your parents expect you to attend college?
No, they expected that I would not attend college.
And why is that?
So, my mother said that why should I go off to college, because it's a big expense.
Okay.
And I would probably get married within a year, which is what happened to her. So she went to college, and then she met my dad, and they got married. So they really discouraged me from going to college. So I did well in high school, and I didn't know that this was happening. I just always assumed that I would go to college. Everyone else in my high school assumed I was going to college because people would write in my my yearbook that I would be going to Vassar or something because I was at the top. I was third in the class. So,
Now what was your high school?
Wauwatosa East.
Okay.
So actually the story is I was third out of about 400 students in my class. So, and I had honors when I was a sophomore. Now the problem is that my mother, because she didn't really, my mother's not very academic, wasn't and still isn't academically oriented, and she wanted me to work. So actually my senior year in high school, I worked half-time at a job, off school grounds. I worked in a bakery after school and on the weekends and on all the holidays. So actually, by the end of my senior year, I was quite exhausted and missed a lot of school, and I hadn't missed any school up until then at all. I mean, I would just always go to school, so except in very rare occasions, I suppose, that I don't remember. But so because of that, when I said I was through in the class, that's the way I started my senior year, but by the end of the class, by the end of that year, I actually ended up graduating eighth in the class.
It's still very impressive.
I would not have been able to go to college if I had not had two scholarships. I had one from the Wauwatosa Rotary Club and then one from the state of Wisconsin.
Okay. Did you apply specially for those scholarships, or were they automatic based on your grades?
No, you had to apply.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you chose to attend UW-Madison.
Right.
Correct? And Did your parents, if you were going to go to college, would they have preferred you to stay in Milwaukee, or did you consider?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So they didn't want me to leave home. Well, I guess partially I think they were just holding on to me, and the other was just the finances of it. Mm-hmm. So I, without those scholarships, I would not have been able to go to Madison at all, and whether I would have been able to go to college at all, I don't know, because they were very, very discouraging.
Okay. Did the scholarships cover the full cost, or did you still have to pay more, or earn more money yourself?
They didn't cover the full cost, but I think the first year it covered most of it, and you know, things didn't cost very much back in those days, so I can't remember what the semester tuition was, but it wasn't, you know, it was around $100 or, you know, not too much more or whatever.
So living expenses were more than tuition then, that was your main concern?
Yeah, I can't remember now how much things cost, but
I
know ice cream cones were about 10 cents, so whatever.
Tuition couldn't have been too much more. Okay, now how did you come to choose mathematics as your major?
I always liked math, and I know I used to, just when I was in high school, I used to work, just get math texts from different places and just work through problems. So I just really liked math, and I just couldn't, because I liked it, I could never imagine a semester going by without taking a math class, and so I just kept taking math as a backbone. Yeah.
Okay, were you thinking of a particular career at that time?
No, I was just doing what I liked. I had an aunt and uncle who suggested that I take computer science courses in college, so I did take 8 credits of computer science the first year in college, and then I took several other courses, but I didn't major in computer science. I think at that time I wanted to do something more pure, so to speak. Like math was just, you know, more of a solid, I thought, background.
Okay.
And of course it's not very employable, so but I was also very interested in natural science, so I took a lot of natural science courses in college.
Okay. Well, maybe I could ask a bit about the computer science department. It wouldn't have been that old when you were taking your courses.
Yeah, so this was 1966. So I don't know when the computer science started, but it was certainly younger years.
I think it started in 1961, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But at that time it was called the Numerical Analysis Department.
Oh.
So I don't know when it becomes the computer science department.
Yeah. So it was interesting because Larry Travis taught this 4 credits of 203 followed by 4 credits of 204. So it had been introductory year-long sequence for computer science students, and I had the impression that it was the first time that was being offered.
Okay.
Because there were maybe 40, 50 people in the class, I would guess. It was in a small lecture room. And I remember Larry Travis recognizing that some of us, like myself, were just out of high school, had never heard of much about a computer before, mm-hmm. totally novice. And then there were other people in the class who had been programming for quite a while, but they didn't have a degree, and this was their chance to get a degree, and so it was very easy for them. So I remember Larry Travis standing up in front one day and said that he realized this was a sink or swim situation, that, you know, there were all these different levels, and he was presenting the material at a certain mm-hmm. level, and you just had to sink or swim, and I worked really hard. And we didn't have, I don't remember that there were TAs or any extra help at that point, so I know there were a lot of things that I didn't pick up right away, like loops, and I remember writing a program that was supposed to use loops, but I didn't get the idea of loops, so I just wrote out every single possibility that I could think of, and I had a card deck that was a box long, whereas, you know, other people ended up with, you know, just maybe 50 cards, you know, for the program, so.
Now, what language were you using?
As I recall, it was Fortran. I know he introduced us to Lisp and assembly language, and I don't know, so it was a survey course, so, but I think that some of the more solid programming that we did was in Fortran.
Okay. Now, you mentioned cards. So what was it like to program using punch cards?
Just, you had to type your statements on key punch machines, one per card, and assemble them, and hope you didn't drop them. and helped that they went through. And then everyone would sit at key punch. So there'd be a huge room full of key punch machines, and everyone would sit at the key punch machine punching cards. And then you get your deck together, and you'd walk over to a window, because they would have special people that would operate the card reader. They didn't let everyone do that. So you'd hand your deck to this operator, and they'd give you a number or a ticket or something, and then you'd wait a while. I mean, it got faster over the years. I can't remember what it was initially. I know my one friend remembers that you'd be lucky if you got in 2 runs a day, to try to get your program compiled. And then you get back all the errors, and of course then you go back to the key punch machine, find the card that was wrong, and type a new card, put it in, and try again, so it was
a very slow and laborious process.
Right.
And I guess you learn not to make small mistakes then. If you forgot a single character somewhere, it would cause big problems.
Well, that's always a problem, with computer programs. I mean, a semicolon, a colon, a comma, I mean, everything has to be exactly right or it doesn't work. So that was good training for paying attention to detail.
Did you enjoy the computer science courses?
I did. I didn't end up majoring in computer science, so I didn't enjoy it that much. But I liked the intrigue of figuring out problems, doing problem solving, and then trying to code up a method or an algorithm for the computer to process.
Okay. Now, what were your favorite math classes?
I don't know.
Okay.
I remember some problem math courses, but I don't remember my favorite math courses.
Well, what were the ones you didn't like then?
So I started out in college in the honors program. So I was taking math honors courses, and I dropped out of that because I don't know, you have to also remember that, as a freshman and in those days, I was very naive, so I don't really know what the context, the bigger picture of this was. But for one of the classes in particular, there was a woman from India, teaching the class, and she couldn't speak English very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wrote everything on the board, which was good that she did that, except we spent the whole hour, writing word for word, everything that she wrote on the board, and I still didn't really get the point, and it was so frustrating, and I didn't understand the class, and so I thought, if this is what the honors is like, I'm going to go back, to the regular, and so I dropped out of the honors sequence.
Okay.
And then I had actually one more bad math class, because, so I was used to getting A's in math. And then I took, when I was, I think my junior year, I took a course that was harder. It was so much harder than any of the other courses. And it was taught by a professor who was new and who didn't last very long here, apparently. And he made it very, we were supposed to prove things. He would present a really hard problem. And there were graduate students in the class, and they said they were totally, they were spending hours themselves, and I know at one point these two guys asked me how I was doing in the class, and I just said, well, it was a point system, and you had to get so many points, and I was hardly getting any points, and so I ended up dropping the class, and I retook it the next semester and got an A in it by, a different teacher who just didn't require so much.
Yes. Okay. Now I'll ask you a few questions about what it was like to be a woman in math at that time. Do you have any memories of your experiences, how you felt about being a woman in math?
At that age, I didn't have any awareness really that I was different, or I didn't look around to see whether there were more men in the class. At least I don't recall anything like that. Because I went through my high school and some of the college where I was used to being at the top of the class, I used to doing well. I was also used to being with men all the time. In fact, to be honest, it was very strange for me to be with women. And I spent both academically and also in my social life, I'd spent all my time with men. And I know years later, there was a women's climbing group that formed, and I was used to rock climbing, and I always climbed with men. And I thought this was so strange. So I knew some of the women, so I went to the women's climbing group, but I felt awkward being there. I didn't know how to relate to women. I didn't know. it was very strange for me. So I was so used to being with men. And I did, as I say, that both the rock climbing, so I was one of the only, well, there was one other woman who was rock climbing at that time. So we spent a lot of time on the weekends. This is not so much when I was an undergraduate, because I was working quite hard then, but towards the end of college and then afterwards, we'd spend weekends at Devil's Lake, and there was just maybe one other woman who would be climbing. So I was so used to being in a man's world that I didn't even think about it.
Okay, so
at that time.
You don't feel like you were treated differently by people than...
Not at that time, I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah. Not till I'm not later, maybe 4 or 5 years out of college, then I did have an employment situation in which I felt that I was discriminated against.
But not at this time here.
Yeah, I really was not.
Okay.
Not aware.
Maybe you could talk a bit about your recollections of the UW campus in the late 1960s, and in particular the protest movement.
I didn't get involved with that. I wasn't very political, and I remember all the National Guard or whatever it was on campus with rifles, and that was pretty intimidating, and I just stayed away from it and didn't get involved.
Did you watch any protests?
I tried to stay away. I know I had some of my men friends. I thought it was, I mean, they were good guys, but they thought it was some sort of a game, you know, to go be where the police were, because they didn't call them police, but I won't say what they called them. And then sort of be, you know, get in this chasing or something. I thought that's ridiculous and dangerous, and I just didn't get involved in it.
So you were a very serious student then, which might make sense
serious,
if you...
Yeah, very serious.
If it had been difficult for you to get to college in the first place, that you wanted to get everything you could out of your experience. Were you working part-time during college, or...?
Oh, yes. In fact, that the computer science that I took that first year was great, because then I programmed through the rest of college and after that, and so it was a way to earn a living that I would never have had without the computer science.
And were you programming for departments or faculty members or in a lab?
I had lots of different jobs. When I was an undergraduate, I worked for something called the Instructional Research Laboratory that doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
So, and that was a student position, but it was a stable student position. I had that for a couple years. And that was Fortran programming. And then after I graduated, I had some stable positions, and at other times I do freelance or consulting programming. And so I used all the Fortran programming to support myself, to put myself through college, and to support myself after that.
Okay. Well, maybe we can now talk about what you did after you graduated. Now, you graduated in 1970. Did you have any career goals at that time?
Actually, I wanted to get a master's degree in computer science. So I had filled out all the application forms, and I was accepted into the program here at the university in Madison. The problem was that because I had so little money and trying to get through college, you know, I was working and going to school. I did it all in 4 years. Even though as an undergrad, you know, there are a lot of lab classes and a lot of time that is used up. So to be really honest, when I graduated in the June of 1970, I was absolutely broke. I didn't have any money, and I was exhausted. And so although I was accepted into the master's program in computer science, I didn't have an assistantship. So I don't know if they had any available at that time or if they just had very few, but I, you know, I didn't have any money, and I just thought, I can't go on like this without a break.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to work for a while.
Okay. Now, what positions did you hold over the next few years? Where did you work?
I worked for the Center for Health Sciences. That was a kind of a continuation of the same project from the Instructional Research Lab when I was an undergraduate. And so I worked there for 4 or 5 years. And I worked for the Center for Demography and Ecology. And again, I did freelance programming for various departments and professors and grad students on the campus.
Okay. Now, I was wondering if you could talk about any noteworthy experiences you had while in the workforce.
So I think the first time that I felt that I was discriminated against was in this job I had for the Center for Health Sciences, where I had worked for quite a while. And they hired a new person who was a guy. And he was a very chatty person, so I got to know him. And he told me how much he was earning, and I just about fell over because I was training him. I had written this the software to be used for the medical school, and I guess it was so successful, or just, you know, not necessarily the software, but just the whole program that the director was doing. So the nursing school wanted to do the same thing. So the person I was working for hired this man to do the same thing for the nursing school. So I was training him. So when I found out he was making so much more than what I was making, and then I think that's when I was very upset. And then I think that's when I first found out that there were these different categories of jobs, you know, that some had benefits, some didn't have benefits, and I didn't really know anything about that. So so when I found out that he was making so much more, I wanted to get back pay from at least, I just asked from the day that he started, and I wanted to get at least equal pay from what he was making. So I took this to to my immediate supervisor, and that didn't, you know, they didn't know what to do. So I actually went to and talked to some dean at the medical school or something, because I thought it was entirely unfair. So the arrangement they settled on was that I could get time off, and they would pay me that way.
Okay.
And then also change my position to be what was called, I believe, an academic staff specialist, a position that would have vacation included, because I had never had any paid vacation, and that would also be on the retirement system.
Okay.
So that's the way it was resolved. So I took some time off that next spring and summer and still got paid, and that until the money equaled out.
Okay. Now, when you talked to your supervisor and to these other administrators, were they sympathetic?
Well, they couldn't argue. They couldn't. I mean, it was just plain facts. So
okay.
They didn't give me a hard time. They didn't, you know, they just said, they didn't have to say that much. They said, well, how can we make this better, you know, so.
Okay. So were you happy with the way the situation was resolved, or did you still feel?
At the time, I was happy, but I think that was the first a realization that nobody was looking after me. So I realized that maybe I need to look after myself, which I had never done before. I was lucky that when I was an undergrad and I was working at this instructional research laboratory, that the director there was so friendly and so caring that he would, you know, give me raises or whatever, and I never asked for anything. And it wasn't actually in my nature, and also I didn't grow up to be thinking that I'm supposed to be, you know, asking for more or promoting myself. I mean, I never learned that. Mm. And I was protected before then. And then I think, so the mid-70s was when I started to realize that I really should start looking out for myself a little more.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask about the women's movement next. And to what extent, and it doesn't sound like you really, up to this point, have been all that aware about the women's movement or all that concerned about it. Is that the case?
It's actually very, very true, at least that I remember. I don't remember thinking about it or being involved in it. As I say, I was a woman in a man's world. For the most part, I was happy for the most part because I did the programming. I took those programming classes in the early or the mid-60s, or 66, 67, and then I had the positions as a programmer. I was actually paid very well compared to other people doing other jobs because there weren't that many programmers, so I was in demand. I had a good salary, and I didn't really get, other than that one experience, which I didn't all put together with the women's movement, I didn't get involved.
Okay. So were you aware in 1972, when the Equal Employment Opportunities Act and the Educational Amendments Act were passed, were you aware of this? Did it concern you at all?
Not really, except my mother gave me a necklace about that time that had ERA on it, and I didn't really understand it. I knew it had something to do with it.
Really? So your mother then was interested?
My mother got involved with the League of Women Voters somewhere in there. I don't know if that was how this all came up, but I think that was, might have had something to do with it. So I don't know.
Okay. Did she ever talk to you about the issue?
Not that I remember.
Okay. Now, please explain why you decided to return to UW to study land resources in the late 1970s.
I had been working as a programmer for a number of years at that point, from 1967 through 1977 or whatever. So I wanted to do something more. I always liked school. In those years, I was taking courses at the university as a special student because I liked to keep learning things. And I found I wanted to get a better job, and I found that when I would apply for jobs that would sound really interesting to me, someone else would get the job because they had a master's degree and I only had a bachelor's degree. So eventually I decided, okay, it's time to go back to school. And the reason I went into land resources is because I had, in my time after graduating from college, I ended up exhausted and broke when I graduated from college. So I spent some time just doing things I wanted to do, and one of those things was spending a lot of time out of doors. And I did a lot of rock climbing. I made some trips to the mountains out west, and I just became so involved with wanting to help save the land. And it just became a driving force. So at that time, the environmental studies was a new area. People were interested in it. I think the Institute for Environmental Studies started sometime in the 70s or 1970. I'm not sure, but it seemed like a really good thing to do. And so my goal was to combine computer science with something environmental. And I looked at all the programs available on campus, and there was no way I could do that. I talked to people in the computer science department, and at that time, they were not interested in applications-oriented work at all. I mean, they were just doing pure computer science. And I had a professor say that to me just to my face: computer scientists are not interested in applications, period. Okay, so then I looked into, I actually didn't know, kind of what I did was my own interdisciplinary degree, but I didn't know that anything like that existed. So in the land resources program, it was a PhD program in the Institute for Environmental Studies, and it had a varied focus. So I could take some technical courses, I could take more computer science, which I definitely wanted to do, and I could take some natural science courses, which is I also wanted to do. So that's what I decided. I also had to take courses that really didn't have much to do with anything I knew about and wanted to take, but it was a compromise. So that's how I entered that program.
Now, you said that the computer scientists weren't interested in environmental studies. Were the environmental studies people interested in computer science at all?
I don't think they were at that time. I mean, I can't say for sure, but I know I had a boyfriend who was a wildlife ecology major. And he thought computers were dumb, And I think he kind of put up with me and my, programming. And I think a lot of people at that time thought that computers were simplistic. I mean, the world is so complicated, and the world just can't be explained in a computer program. And I think that a lot of the pure scientists looked down on computers. So I don't think they were interested at that time.
So they weren't even interested in using computers as a tool, say?
I don't know. I know actually there's some botanists or ecologists were interested in using the punch card technology. They invented some kind of method where you'd line up the holes in the punch cards and it would mean something, to do ecological organization and so forth. So I think some of them certainly were intrigued by it. And ecologists. I became involved with a number of ecologists, and I know they run a lot of statistical methods, and certainly those were all run by the computer.
Okay.
So I would oftentimes get hired. You know, that's something that I had done even before I went to grad school, is run these a StatJob or SPSS, all these statistical programs for various people. So people wanted the results. They wanted these the statistical answers. But I'm not sure they really thought much. So it was just a tool, just
okay.
a tool.
Just yeah. a tool, but they didn't see a larger role for computers.
That's my perception.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I was trying to decide what to go to graduate school in, I explored various fields, and I talked with a professor, a rather famous professor in wildlife ecology, because it sounded interesting to me. But the professor told me that there weren't any women in wildlife ecology. That was just not a field that women should go into, and there weren't any women in wildlife ecology, and that was it. And so that was the end of that.
How did you react when he said that?
I was taken aback because I hadn't heard of that, but then I just kind of accepted it and went on. You know, I didn't. Again, it hadn't the women being discriminated against hadn't really hit me at that time.
But he did discourage you from pursuing that area then.
Oh yeah, I totally dropped it. That was
okay.
it. I mean, what good was it going to be for me to be there? Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe you could talk a little bit about your master's thesis now. I've got the title is Ecological Data Analysis Using a Relational Database Management System.
So, because I wanted to combine computer science with something environmental, and but I did have David DeWitt was on my master's committee, and I had taken what was then 464, the database course. I mean, it's since evolved into 564 and has more programming, but at that time it was 464, and I took that course and I just absolutely loved it. I mean, it just in a way it just changed my world, because I had just spent 10 years or more, you know, working as a programmer. Somebody would want this record, somebody would want that average, somebody, you know, I'd always have to write a program to get these specific answers. And using a database system, if all the information is in there, one could just issue a simple query. At that time it was Quell that we were using. We used the IDM Britton Lee machine, and it had Quell as a query language, and you just get the answer. And I thought, this is amazing. So I actually, you know, fell in love with the area of database systems. So I decided but I could also see the limitations of what database systems couldn't do. So I thought, well, this would be interesting. I'll do some field work out in the Cross Plains Ice Age preserve area, and then I'll put the data into this relational database system and see what kind of analyses I can do. So I was able to do, just using, you know, averages and sums and grouping, I was able to get at some interesting information. But I recognized in that thesis that some of the, you know, interesting, you know, there were no statistical methods that would be part of a database system, and that was a limiting factor. And I also realized that because I did the field work, and I'll say something about that in a second, but because I did the field work, I had a very spatial imprint in my mind of where these different trees and shrubs were. I was trying to look at associations between where shrubs and trees grew with respect to the types of soil or the slope and other vegetation. So, and I had this in my mind, but it was totally lost when I put this data into relational tables. So I recognize that there's a need to incorporate more spatial parts to a database system. So I became, and I still am, very interested in interdisciplinary work. And one of what I've decided is that in order for a person in computer science to really understand a problem that's outside of computer science, one really has to delve into it. And that's why I personally went out and learned how to do the field work, and did the random numbers and walking out there and being out there in the, you know, the rain and whatever, to really know what the data is like and what the limitations are. And I still think that's a valuable component, although it takes a lot of time. So you have one person trying to do two different fields. And just as a funny story about that field work. So I was identifying trees and shrubs, and I was doing a pretty good job until one day I went out there in October sometime, and it had been after a big windstorm and some cold or whatever. I went out to the study area, and all the leaves were down. And I remember how I felt. I just went into, like, you know, a state of panic. I won't know what any of these trees and shrubs are. So I had to learn, you know, how to identify using, you know, twigs and buds and that sort of thing. And I did learn it, but it was a big setback.
Now, this sounds like you're doing something very new. Do you know of other people at the time who were trying to use computers in the same way to store ecological data?
I didn't know of any. And this is interesting too, because when I wrote my master's thesis and I had other references at the back, and they were mainly texts or guides of how to do, you know, quadrant sampling or something, and I didn't have related work that was anything like what I was doing, so I didn't find any. Of course, the internet didn't exist back then, so there could have been some, but I didn't find any, and I know one of the people on my committee made a note of that I didn't have other related work, and I said, well, I don't know of any other, you know, do you? So I think it was pretty new. And actually, one thing that I say, I don't know if this was like being discriminated against because I was a female necessarily, but, you know, I really wish I had published that master's thesis. I mean, I think it would have made a really good paper. But I was so new in the whole area, academic research, I didn't understand publishing. I mean, I did the work, I wrote the thesis, and it was filed in the library, but I didn't know where to publish it. And sometimes I think, you know, my committee members could have helped me out there. But on the other hand, they may have felt, each one of them may have felt that I wasn't really one of them, and they didn't know where this kind of work would get published.
Okay.
I mean, certainly David DeWitt wouldn't have known where to publish something like that. It wouldn't have gone into SIGMOD or, mm-hmm. or whatever. And I think some of the other people also, you know, they weren't used to, they didn't really probably understand what relational database systems were, so they probably couldn't relate. And there was no computers and whatever, you know, computers and geosciences or what, there wasn't anything. If there was something like that, no one told me about it.
It sounds like you were doing very pioneering work, but that made it difficult for you in some way cases because faculty just had trouble advising you.
Right, yeah. Okay. And everybody thought I belonged to somebody else. And I still have that problem. And I still, as a matter of fact, I've been thinking so much about this interdisciplinary degree that I did, which allowed me to do what I really want to do. And so I am absolutely doing what I really want to do. However, I don't have a job that has, you know, job security or the salary that I feel I should be at. And so I'm actually going to an interdisciplinary convocation in 2 weeks. And I made a poster to present. And then, well, the main topic of the poster is it worthwhile to get an interdisciplinary degree? And as I say, I still feel that it is, because I think in order to really understand the problem, you really have to get in there and mess with the data, really know what's involved. But then you have the problem of, you know, the universities, usually research is done at the universities, and the universities hire by department. So if you have an interdisciplinary degree, who's going to hire you? You know? Mm-hmm. So. And there are some exceptions. I mean, now universities are becoming more interested in interdisciplinary work. You have the bioinformatics, so you have computer scientists, you know, being involved with the life sciences. But it's still fairly new, and still it's not really happening for too much, you know, with natural science or environmental issues.
Okay. So you're happy with your choice, but it also led to some difficulties. Now, how did you fund your master's degree?
That was interesting, because I started out with some project assistantship in the remote sensing group, because they had some huge Fortran programs, which were really bears. I don't know. And I knew Fortran, and so they thought I could make some changes to them, but that was a problem. But for the most part, I then was hired by the computer science department, because in those years, the computer science department was growing, and they needed TAs. Mm-hmm. And I knew how to program, and I was I easily had a job with them. I would be a TA for various computer science courses.
Okay.
And I did that until they finally said I reached their limit of whatever it was, 4 or 5 years, and they.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Did you enjoy teaching?
Oh yes. So I had never taught before. Well, that was interesting too, because at first I was so used to doing production work, we actually do something, and I didn't initially think that highly of teaching. I thought, well, I had the impression that I think, unfortunately. I don't have this impression anymore, and I think, unfortunately, a lot of people still do, that teaching is something that you do when you can't do the real thing, so then you just teach. And that's too bad, because I started teaching, and I realized I absolutely loved it, and it was highly challenging. It took an incredible amount of time and energy, but I loved it. So I ended up teaching a number of, TAing for, you know, a Fortran course, the beginning of CS132, which they had the TAs teach the students BASIC during the, and the course was Computers and Society, kind of. So the professor would talk about, you know, issues in society, but the TA parts, you know, when we were actually in the discussion sections, most of us didn't really know a lot about computers and society, I guess. So we pretty much just taught BASIC. So the students would learn how to program in BASIC. And then I taught the 211, which is the two credit course, I think, for engineers, because the engineers were using Fortran.
Okay.
And then eventually I taught the 302, and by that time I had learned Pascal, and then I was teaching in Pascal.
Okay. Now, at what point did you decide to earn a master's in computer sciences?
I was taking as much computer science as I could, and I wanted to take more. And I reached the point where, as I said, the computer science department had hired me for a number of years, and I think the university was finally cracking down on, you know, you can't keep hiring a grad student for more than so many years. And so at some point, and unfortunately it was like 2 weeks before school started, so I found out I didn't have a TA ship that fall. And so I just took stock of where I was at, and I knew I wanted to take more computer science, and I thought, well, at that time, people in computer science were getting pretty good jobs with master's degrees. They seemed to be in demand. And I realized I only needed 3 courses to get a master's degree, and so I thought, well, I'll just spend a semester without any money coming in and finish off the master's degree. And somewhere in that time frame, I joined the Women in Computer Science group, the WICS group, and I don't remember who started it, and I didn't still, at that point, I guess I was becoming aware that there weren't as many women around than men, and so I thought that was a good group to be in, and I managed the email list for that group for a while.
What sorts of activities did WICS do?
I think we just had meetings and, you know, in a conference room, have something to eat, bring a bag lunch, something like that.
So it was mainly social then, just to get to know each other?
I think that's what I remember.
Okay. Now, at that time, were there any women faculty in computer science?
You know, I'm not sure when the first woman was hired. There, you know, I don't remember. There were starting to be a few.
Okay.
So I finished the master's degree in computer science, and also by that time I had already finished all the PhD coursework for the land resources program. So then I was totally broke again. So I went out into the workforce, and I ended up being an assistant professor in computer sciences at UW-Platteville.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really, really nice job. And so I only had a master's degree, and I was hired on a tenure track, professor position.
Was that common in those days?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Common for computer science. It might have been common for computer science. I don't know. Certainly not in other areas.
Okay.
But and they did tell me that they expected that I would finish a PhD. I mean, to actually get tenure, they said they expected me to have a PhD. But I don't know if they really could have enforced that, or if they were very strict about that in those years.
Okay. So just to clarify, what year was it that you were an assistant professor at UW-Platteville?
1983 I started.
83, okay. So now you just mentioned that you were working on a PhD in land resources. When had you decided to go for that PhD?
Oh, that was this, at some point when I finished the master's in land resources, I felt like I had barely scratched the surface. I wanted to take a lot more computer science. I wanted to just delve, because the master's in land resources was very general. You just take a couple courses here, a couple courses there, and it was way too broad for me. So I just kept going and going because I just had this incredible desire to keep learning,
mm-hmm.
learning more. And I wanted to finish the PhD, but I couldn't without graduate student support. So.
Okay. So then in 1983-84, you're working at Platteville,
mm-hmm.
You've completed both master's degrees at this time.
Right.
And now you've done the coursework for a PhD.
Yeah, I finished all that. Yeah.
Okay. So how would you describe your year at UW-Platteville?
It was, I worked really hard because I was teaching, several courses. Well, the first semester maybe just two courses, the second semester three. And they were using PL1 and PLC, PL/1, PL/C. And it was supposed to be similar to, I think they told me it was similar to Pascal, but I mean it wasn't. And of course when you're teaching, you have to know exactly, the periods, the semicolons and so forth. So, and they were also using different computers, and I can't remember now what they were using, some IBM machines. So I had to learn, new operating systems and new editors and new languages and new, so it was a lot of work.
Okay.
But it was interesting. And then I think they did away with PLC probably the year after that and went to Pascal,
okay.
which is too bad. So it was a lot of work for me. But I liked being at Platteville. Can I just go on? Keep going.
Sure.
So I liked being at Platteville, but I really wanted, it was really very low level for me. I mean, I still myself wanted to keep learning more rather than stopping where I was at.
So this wasn't a research position, it was mainly teaching?
It was a teaching, yeah.
Okay.
It was an assistant professor teaching position.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had, in the second semester, because I wanted to get back into Madison, and Edgewood needed people to teach there in their evening classes, so the second semester I was at Platteville, I was also driving back to Madison and teaching at Edgewood, teaching an evening course at Edgewood, because I wanted to get a position. And then what happened the following summer was I found out that the computer science department needed someone to teach the database class in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I really jumped at that opportunity. So I decided not to stay at Platteville, even though Platteville was a more secure job and it was a higher salary. But I really wanted to teach the database course. I was very excited about that. And then I also, at the same time, then Edgewood offered me a full professorship, which again would have, so all these things happened at once, so that would have been a secure job, but it didn't pay very much. I mean, it paid less than I think what I was earning as a lecturer in computer science, but it would have been something that would have gone on, rather than just abruptly ending, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I really wanted to be with the university and stay with the computer science department and teach that database course, and that's what I did. And I stayed there for 5 years until budget cuts came through from the legislature that, the computer science department had to lay people off and reorganize. And at that point, I knew, I mean, I'd always said that if I was never going to leave that job at computer science, but if it ever ended, I knew that I would go back and get my PhD.
Okay.
And then I re-entered graduate school.
Okay. Okay. Now, you seem to have no regrets about the 5 years you spent teaching in the department.
No, I loved being in the department and teaching. I wanted to do more. I mean, there was still the part of me that just wanted to do more. I felt like I wasn't reaching my potential.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what it was, and that sounds really dumb almost to say that, because I hadn't, even though I had done a piece of research for my master's degree in land resources, like I said before, I didn't publish it. I didn't really get that idea that you were supposed to write something and publish it, and I still didn't get it. I didn't know. And when I look at some of the things that I spent time on when I was at computer science teaching, because I would delve into these different areas and I would try to figure out how some things worked, and I assumed that everyone else knew how they worked except me, until I started asking people, and some of the professors would come back and say, well, they never really looked at that or mm-hmm. thought about it or whatever. And so I was very slowly getting the idea that what research was, to be able to look at something and that maybe that I could do it, you know. So, because it's odd that I didn't really get what it was. Now, this is all I do is try to think of ideas, write papers, pull things together, look at related work. I mean, that's what I do now, but I just didn't really get that before.
So it sounds like there were questions, and you would go and answer the question for yourself, that recognizing that information would be new for other people, and
right,
you could have gone
right.
to publish.
And I could have written up, there were at least one, maybe two things that I really spent time on that I look back at. I could have written a paper with everything that I thought about, pulled together.
Mm.
You know, I could have published that somewhere. But I didn't, the whole world of publishing, no one had ever introduced me to, and I just didn't. I didn't understand it.
Okay.
So,
you never really had a mentor then in computer science?
Right. Yeah, I was just on my own.
Okay.
And actually, I was going to say, just things have changed so much, because when I was even a TA in the computer science department back in those years, I developed my own materials. And I know now they have someone who is sort of the head of all the TAs, and you get a syllabus, and you get, I think, even lecture notes, or everything's prepared for you.
Mm-hmm.
And there are advantages to having everything be standardized. But I know I wouldn't have liked that at the time. I'm a very independent kind of person. And, well, probably when I first started, I would have loved it, actually. If I walked in there and not knowing what was supposed to be, yeah, it would have been great. But after I had been there for a while, if someone had said, okay, well, I can't follow my notes, I have to follow someone else's, I wouldn't have liked it. I wouldn't have liked that. But it was back in those years, everyone was doing his or her own thing. You know, we'd develop our own courses, we'd put in, just use our own judgment as to what should be in, what the
mm-hmm.
program should be, how many, and it was very autonomous, and I love that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you wanted to talk a little bit about your time at UW-Platteville.
So I had a pretty good experience there. I liked being with the university. I liked being in a small town. But it was kind of strange because at one point there was a university-related group of women that met at some fancy, sort of like a university club or something. I can't remember if that's what it was called. But so it was all women, and this one woman, and I didn't know anybody, so I had this one woman who was kind of walking me around, introducing me. And one of the other women asked me, she said, "And what does your husband do?" And I was so, I didn't know how to answer that. I thought, oh, I mean, it never occurred to me that all these women were the wives of the professors, whereas I was a professor. I mean, I didn't know that was a situation. I was the only woman professor there, apparently, or at least one of a few. So. I was really taken aback by that, so anyway.
Was that a negative for you? Did it bother you?
Well, I was sort of insulted at first, I mean, what is my, because I wasn't married, so I thought, well, that was the first thing I'd say, but then I thought, well, but she assumes that I'm just somebody's wife, and I thought, well, I don't think of myself that way.
Yeah.
You know, it just hadn't occurred to me that other people would think of me that way. So.
Okay, and then working in a mostly male environment, that didn't bother you either this time?
I was so used to it, I just didn't even think about it.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay. Now, when your position was cut as instructor at computer science, you then, the next thing you did was to complete your PhD in land resources, correct?
Right.
Okay. And just for the record, your thesis was titled Object-Oriented Database Management Technology for Feature-Based Geographic Information Systems. Now, what did you do after you earned your PhD?
I really thought that I would get hired as a faculty member here at UW-Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And why did I think that? I think it's because because I had had straight A's all through college and I was always, you know, getting awards and whatnot, so I thought I was doing something good, and I thought that pulling these fields together, computer science with environmental studies, I thought everybody would think that was great, and I thought people were interested in environmental studies. But then I realized that because I spent all these years getting my PhD, that really the climate had totally changed. People weren't, because I didn't get the PhD then until 1994. I had started, you know, all my hopes and dreams, whatever, back in the late 70s. So things had really, really changed. I mean, there was not as much money. Things had tightened up. I wanted to get a faculty position either in computer science or something that would be mostly computer science, or as a second choice, a faculty position in the Institute for Environmental Studies. And I remember that at one seminar, one of the faculty in environmental studies said that, you know, gone are the days when we could hire a really good person and just put him or her on our faculty. He said, now we have to decide, okay, what's our strategic plan? Do we have a gap somewhere or a way that we want to go? And then we have to decide that ahead of time, and then we'll look for somebody who fits that profile.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then I realized that this was getting hopeless, although I still try. I mean, I still apply for positions. But
but it was very, very unlikely that a department would go after your area because it was so new.
Well, and it wasn't maybe solid enough in any one area.
Okay.
It was too interdisciplinary.
Okay.
So I still struggle with that to this day. I keep getting, I keep trying to get back to computer science because I feel that that's where I belong. And yet computer science has tightened up so much that that's pretty impossible.
Mm.
So I'm trying to, now, I'm still trying to figure out how to get secure employment, and right now I have grants that help pay my salary. I'm not totally grant funded, but the grants are keeping me in the position, and I'd like to make it permanent. But it's all, you know, between federal cuts and state cuts, and it's just a hard time. And people don't really care about the environment so much anymore. That's just not. People aren't interested in it so much. Money's not going there.
Okay. Now, your current position is in the Land Information and Computer Graphics Facility, correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, what are your connections to the Computer Science Department? I mean, do you know the faculty? Do you go to seminars? Do you become involved with the department at all?
I go to the database seminars. They're on Friday afternoons, and I try to catch almost all of them, actually.
Okay. Okay.
And I've given a couple seminars over there too, just talking about my work.
Okay.
So, and I try to get to SIGMOD when I can. So I try to stay up mainly with the database field. There's some other areas, some other seminars that I see announced, and I try to get to, but I don't usually get to, unless it's a distinguished lecturer or something. But otherwise, I keep my email on the computer science computer, and that way I get the messages every day and at least know some things that are going on.
Okay.
And I haven't lately, but I was going to all the picnics twice a year just to catch up, you know, with the faculty, because I know some of the faculty as friends. And
okay.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look likely at this time that there'll be a position that you could apply for?
I keep applying, but it's not likely that they'll hire me.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's a problem. I have a friend who is a very good, and she said that shortly after she was hired, she thought the entire department just closed up. And even though she is a very good, has a national reputation, she doesn't think she would have been hired if it had been maybe 2 years later.
Okay.
She could see when everything just closed, totally closed, where they really were looking for people with significant national and international reputations.
Okay.
And,
so you have to be a superstar to get hired these days.
Right. That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
And so my question is, where does everyone else go then? So.
Okay. Are you happy with the work you're doing now? Do you enjoy your position?
I love the work I'm doing. Absolutely love it. So I'm doing exactly what I want to do. I'm doing, I'd like to do more computer science, more database, and but I'm in a good position where I can learn enough about the environmental applications or environmental areas, and be able to pull that together with the latest research going on in the semantic web area, which is sort of not just databases, AI. Mainly database, focusing on database.
Okay. Okay, continue.
So I wanted to just review the evolution of the computer science department, because when I started with them, the facilities, the key punch machines and card readers were in an old frame building that was either on Park Street or on Murray Street between University Avenue and Johnson. And it was just an old building, and you had to walk upstairs to, you know, work on your punch cards. And I remember somebody dropped a whole box of cards once as they were going down the stairs. And since the cards have to be in a particular order for the program to work, and the cards were not numbered at that time, so that was a big problem. So, and but along with the computer science department, the whole university, in those years, everything was growing. There were so many opportunities. There were new jobs, and there were all these possibilities. And now, it's just not like that. I mean, the university is gets some of its money from the state, and it's been getting less and less money from the state. The legislature, I don't think they really understand or appreciate research, as one aspect, and they don't, it just seems, I regret this, because there's just so much difference. I know I'm not sure I'll be able to afford to send my daughter to college, but for totally different reasons. I mean, well, my parents, I was the oldest of four kids. I guess that was, and it was just an attitude too, but there was money coming from the state. I mean, I had some scholarship money coming from the state. And in these years, the tuition's going up and up, and the university is being downsized. So it costs more for the students to get into the university, or to be here, and fewer students are accepted. And I think it's totally the wrong direction. I think that the university should be expanded.
Okay, please continue.
So at this time, 2004, the university is still downsizing, and it makes it even more difficult for someone like me, who is interdisciplinary, because I need to be in a progressive situation. I could be hired by a computer science department who is interested in something, more in applications, or I could be hired by an environmental group that had the money, extra money, to hire someone that was in computer science and could offer something there. But the environmental studies is, not highly funded these days. And it's, I don't know, both for myself, it puts me in an insecure financial position. Salaries, I know no one's getting a pay raise this year. And there's a lot of job insecurity. And that's not good. So I think that when I look back at my life, I think I should have just done the PhD in computer science and then done the applications or my environmental work on the side, because right now the National Science Foundation is still very interested in interdisciplinary work and computer science being related to digital government, which is part of the grant I have now, or other sciences. So there's some grant opportunities there now, even though the actual job or position opportunities aren't there.
So are you saying then at the federal level there is interest in interdisciplinary work, but just not at the state level or not at the university level?
Well, as far as the funding agencies, the National Science Foundation is mainly the one I'm familiar with, and they are very interested in interdisciplinary work, and they see it as a solution to some, they're trying to get, as the grant I have right now is digital government. They want computer scientists to get involved with government, government needs, government applications. How can government provide services more quickly, more safely? Even the Homeland Security, a lot of that, could have to do with computer science techniques that help in various ways. So the funding agencies are very interested in interdisciplinary work, and that's why I have hope, and that someone is interested in what I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as having a stable position, I think one has to be on the faculty to do that, and unfortunately, I don't see any departments. I mean, hiring is done by department, and I don't see departments hiring in an interdisciplinary way. And the cluster hires, I know there are some initiatives like a cluster hire, but even each individual from a cluster hire still is in a particular department. So the university just isn't into, as I see it, at least this university isn't into interdisciplinary work, and certainly not in my field. So, but I'm still working and still working on trying to change that and looking for opportunities. So another...
Okay, please continue.
I wanted to say something about being a mother, and I guess I talked earlier when I seemed to be oblivious of the women's movement, or I didn't seem to, other than some isolated circumstances when I did feel discriminated against, I wasn't really big on, feminist movements or whatever. But my biggest introduction to female discrimination came from being a mother. And then I found that it's very difficult to operate as a mother. I mean, you don't have the money coming in. Childcare is just exorbitantly expensive, and it's not very available. I understand there might be a little bit of childcare available on campus, but there's hardly any. I mean, there would be waiting lists. There'd be far more people who'd want to use the services than there are slots open. And along with that, I have to say, and this is, it seems kind of trivial, but it's just so important, it's parking. Because you have parking for handicapped people, and yet, being a mother is an incredible handicap, and it's not considered a handicap.
Mm.
It's a handicap because there's no time to do that extra, 20-minute walk from some faraway place, and it's impossible to ride the bus because you're doing double commutes. You have to drop the child off somewhere, then you have to get to where you're going, and you have to get back and do it in reverse, and everything has to be by time, because if you're more than 7 minutes late for picking your child up, then they charge you money, extra money. So you're running your life according to very, very strict time schedules, and you really need to have transportation and parking, and that was just a terrible problem. And of course, getting a parking place on campus, it would be out of the affordability range of most mothers. Actually, I was and am a single mother, so it does make it, I have more constraints, more financial constraints, more time constraints than other people, but I hear other people saying a lot of these same things. So, and also, as far as being a mother and trying to work, the university is a good place in the sense that it's very flexible. My job is actually a good thing because I'm not in a tenure track situation, so I don't have to worry about having, 6 years to get so many papers in and having that be the same time as having a small child. But it still is a problem for women, and I don't have an easy answer to it, but I think that our whole society has to become less competitive and to allow more people to achieve their potential, including these mothers. There are people who can, I mean, right now it's either you have the job or you have the position or you're out. And I think there's so many people who could be doing so much, but they don't have, you know, there aren't very many part-time positions, and there's no flexibility that way. And there's not enough money to pay people to, I think the government should be paying more people to try to achieve their potential and just have more flexibility, more alternate types of positions to let mothers and other people too just reach their potential.
Okay, please continue.
I want to say about being a mother is that when I was interviewing for jobs, I was always very careful not to let it be known that I had a child, because I thought that it might count against me, you know, that people would not hire me if they knew that I was a mother, you know, that somehow I wouldn't do as good of a job or something. So I was careful not to let people know, and even after I was hired somewhere, I wouldn't tell people for a long time. I mean, eventually it would come out, but not for a long time. So kind of along with that, I still feel, now that I am very aware of women versus men in the world, I think that this still is very much a man's world. The university offers a lot of good potential, but you know, it's still a man's world, I think. And I've appreciated the university because it's let me reach my potential. That's been very satisfying, even though I don't have the, you know, the stable job. It's still satisfying to be able to do what I want to do. And I've been trying to be supportive for my daughter with science and math. I've tried to encourage her to be in math, to do well in math. And I take her to the middle, when they bring the university brings middle school girls to campus to have them, to encourage them to go into science. It's called Expanding Your Horizons. So I do that with my daughter every fall, or I have these falls that she's been in middle school. And so I think I just want to make a comment that for some of the experiences I've had at the university, good and bad, I know I grew up in a time when it was, a person was supposed to be seen and not heard, and I think that that's some, you know, like a, maybe a personal problem. I think that the girls of that are growing up now are more self-confident, more expressive, and I think that they'll be more successful than I was able to be, or we'll see yet. I'm not done trying.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.